Welcome to Queer Wellness Unpacked. I'm your host, Tisha, your queer hormone nutritionist and TMI bestie. I help people like you to improve their hormones, metabolism, and their relationship to food and their bodies using an inclusive and anti-diet lens. Join me as we deep dive into conversations about diet culture, hormonal health, sexuality, and let's be real, the topics that maybe we're too shy to bring up anywhere else. Follow me on Instagram at Nourish with Tish and make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. All right, let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of Queer Wellness Unpacked. I am so excited to be diving into this episode. Today, we're going to be taking a look at what to eat for healthy hormones. And as a little disclaimer before we get started, I just want to say that these are meant to be general nutrition guidelines and it is not meant to be prescriptive. And at the end of the day, only you can know if something is a good fit for you and your body. And if you're looking to make healthy changes, I highly recommend checking in with your personal healthcare provider to make sure that you're finding something that works for you. This is just going to be a gentle overview of what you can do to help support your hormones, but of course, nutrition is incredibly complex, and I am speaking at the most general, basic level of all this. So that's just something to keep in mind as we go through this. And I really just say that because sometimes we have this habit of listening to a podcast or consuming a piece of social media and assuming that any piece of nutrition advice directly applies to us. And as a gentle reminder, that might not be the case. And unless you're working with a healthcare professional who can check labs, run tests, or understand what signs of deficiency might look like, we don't want to just go blindly making these big changes to our health without really knowing what's going on underneath the surface. And so that's why in today's episode, we're really going to be taking a look at the foundational aspects of nutrition when it comes to healthy hormones and the basic changes that I think most people will likely see a benefit by incorporating these very gentle nutrition practices. And so while we will be talking a little bit more about certain nutrients and minerals, I just want to say as a gentle reminder that this is not me telling you to go out and go take a certain supplement or drastically change your diet, because these things are not inherently benign, right? I know it can be so tempting to listen to a podcast episode and hear someone talk about the benefits of magnesium and be like, okay, I'm going to go out and now I'm just going to take a high dose magnesium supplement without really understanding the complex mechanisms that are happening within the body. So to avoid that, today we're really just taking a look at a whole foods approach to nutrition when it comes to healthy hormones. So with that said, what do we mean when we say healthy hormones? Right now, I feel like it's very much a buzzword to say something is hormone balancing or that it can balance your hormones or can allow you to have healthy hormones. And so what exactly are we talking about when we say that? Can your hormones actually be balanced? The reality is that your hormones are always fluctuating. So this idea that your hormones are imbalanced is kind of a misnomer because on any given day, they're going to look different. Especially if you're somebody who is menstruating and you have a menstrual cycle. So with that being said, there are predictable ranges that we can expect for our hormones. There are predictable patterns that we will see with our hormones throughout our menstrual cycle. And so when we're talking about hormone balance, we are talking about these predictable fluctuations. We expect to see certain things happen at certain points of the month, at certain points in your cycle. And if that's something you want to learn more about, what kind of predictions we're looking for, what kind of fluctuations we are expecting, I highly recommend going to check out the episode, Relearning Your Menstrual Cycle, because I go through your menstrual cycle from start to finish, and we talk about exactly that. The other piece I want to mention before we get into it is that when it comes to your health, your hormones are actually the last thing to be impacted. So hormone health is really a top-down approach, meaning it happens in the brain, and every system in the body is impacted before it gets to your hormones. And that's because hormones are chemical messengers, and so they are reacting to their environment. They're reacting to what is happening inside the body. So typically when we are seeing these hormone imbalances or these hormone fluctuations, we can assume that there are other things already going on in the body. So when we talk about hormones, we're not just talking about hormones. We're talking about every other system in the body. We are talking about thyroid and metabolism. We are talking about digestion and elimination. We are talking about adrenal health, about stress. We are talking about liver and detoxification, because all of these systems are going to impact your hormone health. And everything is very interconnected. And I say this because so often when somebody is struggling with hormone health, they really just want to jump to the food aspect. I'm like, well, what can I change with my diet? What should I be cutting out? Should I be going gluten-free or dairy-free? What supplement can I take? Should I be taking DIM? And to those people, I say, we might have to actually take a step back. We may have to be looking at what is happening to the body as a whole, and we probably have to start with the foundational aspects of health. And for most people, that's going to look like making sure that you're getting enough sleep, making sure that you're managing your stress, making sure that you're working on your relationship with food and your body, and that you're eating enough to fuel your body. These are going to be the things that are going to bring on the biggest changes to your health. And I know those things aren't sexy, I get it, but that is typically where I recommend people start no matter what. So if that is brand new information to you, I highly recommend you go back a few episodes. I've got some posts on diet culture, I got some posts on cortisol and burnout, where we talk about how to recognize stress in the body and what you can do about it. And if you want to learn about that topic more in depth, I also have a masterclass, Beat the Burnout. It's a 1-hour masterclass where we literally talk about how stress impacts your health. We talk about how it impacts your hormones, how it impacts your gut. We talk about the importance of repleting lost nutrients to support our adrenals. And then we also go into the role that our circadian rhythm plays in adrenal health and therefore our hormone health. So definitely recommend that if you're looking for an introduction to stress and burnout. And then if you want just a foundational overview of nutrition and how to fuel your body and how to improve your relationship to food in your body, I definitely recommend checking out my course, Diet Freedom Academy. It's a 4-week course where we go through exactly that, and we learn the basic principles of intuitive eating and also how to properly fuel and nourish yourself. And it really goes into the foundations of what healthy eating looks like. So if you have a lot of questions about eating whole grains or certain oils or different kinds of dietary fat or how many calories you should be eating, that is definitely the course for you. That is where we go over all of that information. So yeah, those are some resources to check out. And then also, like I said, there are some podcast episodes where we go through these exact same things. So definitely check those out. So for the sake of today's podcast episode, we're gonna assume that you are doing everything right. You have got the basics covered. You are working with your relationship with food, you're practicing intuitive eating, you're getting enough sleep, you're practicing good sleep hygiene, you're working on managing your stress, you're working with your circadian rhythm, you're getting sun exposure first thing in the morning, and so you're doing all of the basics. And now you're like, okay, what changes can I make to my diet to help support my hormones? And also, what person would benefit from supporting their hormones? So to be honest, I think anybody who has hormones, which is everybody, could benefit from supporting their hormones, especially because as you'll see as we go through it, a lot of these are just applicable to good nutrition in general. So yes, they benefit hormones, but that's because they also benefit a lot of other systems in the body. But if you're somebody who struggles with painful periods or PMS, or if you're struggling with a condition like PCOS, if you are on oral birth control or oral contraceptives, if you struggle with ovulation or irregular periods, or you lack a period, then this can kind of give you the foundational tools you need to get pointed in the right direction. So with all that said, let's take a look at the 6 places that I think you should start if you are looking to eat for healthy hormones. So number 1 is eating to feel safe. And if you've been around here for a little bit, this probably doesn't surprise you. I've talked about this in other podcast episodes, but the very first place we need to start is making sure that we are eating enough to support our bodies. And this is true for everybody, but this is especially true if you are somebody who has a menstrual cycle. And I've talked before in other podcast episodes about how detrimental dieting can be, especially chronic dieters, a lot of us have grown up being told that we need to undereat, that we need to restrict, that we constantly need to be consuming less in order to, you know, fit into society's beauty standards. And the impact of that can be very, very negative when it comes to our hormonal health. Our periods are incredibly sensitive to undereating. And this makes sense from a biological perspective. During times of stress, during times of famine, your body is not going to prioritize getting pregnant. It's not going to prioritize your reproductive health. So if you are undereating, you are likely going to see issues with your period, issues with your hormones. And so the very first thing we need to check in with when it comes to eating for healthy hormones is, are we eating enough to fuel our everyday needs? And there are a couple ways to assess this. For starters, we can look at the RDA. So the RDA for women is 2,000 calories a day, and the RDA for men is 2,500 calories a day. And then you can also use a calorie calculator to assess your activity level and to find out if you're consuming enough calories for your needs. And beyond that, you can also check in with yourself to see if you are eating enough. So a couple things to consider and to ask yourself. First and foremost, do you feel hungry? Do you wake up feeling hungry, or do you feel like you experience hunger throughout the day? Especially if maybe you're trying to eat healthier and you often find that you're eating those things, but you still feel really hungry after, that's a very good sign that you likely aren't eating enough. Do you feel exhausted after workouts? And by exhausted, I mean you could take like a 2-hour nap after, you feel completely wiped, you do not feel energized by working out. Do you feel like you can't really sustain yourself during your workouts, that you run out of energy really quickly? That can be a sign that you're undereating. Do you experience anxiety? Oftentimes we can experience anxiety in relation to our blood sugar levels, because when our blood sugar dips as a result of not eating enough, our cortisol can spike, and cortisol is a stress hormone, so it can make us feel more anxious. Do you feel irritable? This is such a big one for me. I always know when it's time for me to eat something, when I feel like I can't process any new stress or can't process any information and I'm easily overwhelmed and irritated, chances are I'm hungry. Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? That can definitely be a sign that you are undereating, especially waking up in the middle of the night. That can often be a sign that your blood sugar is dipping too low. And again, you're having that increase of cortisol, that stress hormone, which is then waking you up in the middle of the night. So that can definitely be a sign that you are not eating enough. Are you having a daily bowel movement? Do you feel constipated? We need to be eating a large volume of food in order to be regular, in order to go to the bathroom every day. So if you are experiencing constipation, that could also be a sign that you're not eating enough. And I really love getting in the habit of checking in with yourself, because that also allows you to check in with yourself throughout your cycle. For example, you might notice around your luteal phase right before you get your period that you're way more hungry than you are any other time of the month. And that's completely normal. So that's a good sign to increase your caloric intake. Or you may notice that you are hungrier during times of stress, or maybe less hungry during times of stress, or you are increasingly hungry when you are doing more physical activity. And all of these things are very normal. So it can be very beneficial to just get into the habit of asking yourself if you are eating enough to feel energized and fueled throughout the day. And so along with making sure that we're eating enough calories, we also want to make sure that we're eating frequently throughout the day to really avoid those dips in blood sugar levels. So ideally, we're eating every 3 to 4 hours. So in a perfect world, you're eating within an hour of waking up. Preferably, you're having breakfast with your coffee or before your coffee, but if that's not you, that's okay. I get it. That's definitely an area that I'm not perfect with. But ideally, you're eating every 3 to 4 hours to keep that blood sugar balanced. And that brings us to point number 2, balancing your blood sugar. So like I said at the beginning of this podcast, a lot of these things are applicable to everybody. Everybody needs to be balancing their blood sugar. But this is especially true for people who are trying to have healthier hormones, because blood sugar does play an important role in overall hormone health. So for example, if you were somebody with PCOS, there's a good chance that you were already dealing with insulin resistance, and high insulin can actually tell the body to produce more testosterone, which can worsen PCOS symptoms. High insulin levels also lower sex hormone binding globulin, which is a protein made in the liver that binds to your sex hormones. So with a decrease in SHBG, you can end up with excess estrogen, which can worsen symptoms like heavy periods, sore breasts, and fibroids. And then on the flip side, if you're dealing with a drop in blood sugar, progesterone receptors can't transport or bind progesterone, so we really want to make sure that we're balancing blood sugar and avoiding those spikes and crashes in our blood sugar, because it does have an important impact on our hormones. So how do we do that? Well, we really want to make sure, like I said, that we're eating every 3 to 4 hours and we're not going long periods of time without eating. And I know this can be really hard if you have a busy schedule. You know, it's very easy to wake up, have coffee, go to work for 8 hours, maybe have a snack, and then come home and just have dinner and call it a day. But the first thing we want to make sure we're doing is that we're eating enough food and that we are eating frequently throughout the day. We also want to make sure that we are avoiding naked carbs. So you want to make sure that if you're eating carbohydrates, and we love carbohydrates, we'll be talking in a minute about why carbs are so important for hormone health, but we want to make sure that we're pairing carbs with fat and protein. And the nice thing is that typically when you eat protein, most protein sources, especially obviously animal protein sources, are already going to come with fat attached to it. So really you just want to make sure that you're pairing your carbohydrates with your protein. Not only is this going to increase the satiety of the meal, so you're going to feel more full for longer, but it's also going to slow down how quickly those carbohydrates are broken down into glucose in the body, so you're not going to have that drastic spike in blood sugar. And then when it comes to our carbohydrates, we want to make sure we're choosing fiber-rich carbohydrates. So things like beans, legumes, chia seeds, flax seeds, whole grains, vegetables. We really want to make sure that we're getting enough fiber in our diet. Women need 25 grams of fiber per day and men need 38 grams of fiber per day. And most of us don't even meet half of that need. So we really want to make sure that for every meal we're eating, we are getting healthy carbohydrates that have a source of fiber and healthy fats and protein. And that perfectly leads us into number 3 on how to eat for healthy hormones, which is eating a balanced plate. And by balanced plate, I'm talking specifically about your macronutrients. So we're going to talk a little bit about protein, fat, and carbohydrates, why we need them and why they're important for hormone health. And then we're going to switch gears and talk about our micronutrients and what we should be consuming for healthy hormones. So let's kick it off by talking about protein and why we need it. So we need protein because it is responsible for the maintenance and growth of muscle, skin, and other body tissues. Essentially, everything in our body is made up of protein, so it's really important that we're getting an adequate intake of protein. So protein itself is made up of amino acids, and then when we eat protein, that is broken down into these amino acids, which you can think of as building blocks or Legos that are then used to build other things like cells and enzymes, neurotransmitters, and hormones. So without adequate protein, we risk not having enough of the amino acids that we need for all of these essential functions. And that's also why it's really important to get a lot of variety when it comes to proteins, because different proteins have a different amino acid makeup, and we need different amino acids for different purposes, which is why we want to make sure we're not just consuming, you know, chicken breasts or muscle meat all the time, and that we're really switching it up and trying to get some diversity in what we're consuming. So like I said, not only do we need hormones for the synthesis of muscle and tendons and skin and other tissues, but it's also responsible for creating enzymes and hormones. So enzymes are the catalyst for thousands of biochemical reactions in the body. So we need enzymes for energy production, digestion, liver function, and hormone production. And then there's the makeup of the hormones themselves. So some hormones, like sex hormones, are made up of cholesterol. So we'll talk a little bit about how fat impacts our hormone production. But some hormones are made from protein, for example, insulin. So it's really important that we're getting enough protein in our daily diet. In the body, we also have carrier proteins. So we have proteins that transport and store important nutrients like glucose, cholesterol, and iron. And then protein itself is also a good source of B vitamins, and we need that for the production of hormones. So for example, Certain B vitamins like B6, B12, and folate are cofactors in estrogen production. And low B6 can also negatively impact progesterone levels because B6 can help to increase progesterone. Protein also provides us with important vitamins and minerals like magnesium, zinc, selenium, and vitamin A. And we'll talk a little bit about why those are important. So in general, a good rule of thumb is that we want to make sure that we're eating around 20 to 30 grams of protein per meal and 10 grams of protein per snack. And some good food sources of protein include poultry, grass-fed beef, pasture-raised pork, seafood, fish, dairy, eggs, organic non-GMO soy, legumes, and beans. And I do often get questions about soy and its impact on hormone health because a lot of people know that soy is a phytoestrogen, which means that it is a plant form of essentially a pseudoestrogen. It mimics estrogen in the body. And so sometimes people can be really concerned with how that plays or impacts our hormone health. And the great thing about phytoestrogens is that they actually have this unique ability to balance estrogen. So if we are somebody who is not producing enough estrogen, it provides a dietary source of estrogen, so it can help to increase our estrogen levels. And then on the flip side, if we're worried about higher levels of estrogen, phytoestrogens are actually a weaker source of estrogen, so it can actually take the place of those stronger hormones in the body and help to reduce our overall estrogen levels. So when it comes to the estrogenic component of soy, I don't really think it's something that we need to be concerned about. And I just recommend, when possible, opting for an organic and non-GMO soy. Okay, so let's talk about dietary fat. And poor fat has been demonized for so long, but I do think now, for the most part, people are aware that we actually do need dietary fat and that it plays an essential role in our health. And that is also true when it comes for hormone health. So we need fat for the production of steroid hormones. So estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, cortisol, these are all steroid hormones, meaning that they are derived from cholesterol. So we need to be consuming adequate dietary fat. And I do also want to quickly mention that most cholesterol in our body is actually produced endogenously in the liver, which means that we produce it ourselves. So the majority of cholesterol in the body, we actually produce, and then 20% is from our dietary consumption of fat. And if you're hearing this and you're like, okay, well then what's the big deal of me eating enough dietary fat or not if my body is just going to produce it on its own? And the answer is that it falls onto your liver to produce this cholesterol, and your body is going to produce this cholesterol either way because it needs it. It needs to produce these hormones, but all you're doing by reducing your dietary fat is that you are increasing the burden on the liver. And we'll talk a little bit about your liver health, but your liver does over 500 other functions in the body. And so not only does this negatively impact your liver, but there's also research to show that it does impact your hormones and that people who consume low-fat diets are much more likely to have lower levels of other hormones like estrogen. And when we're talking about healthy fats, we also want to make sure that we are consuming the right ratio of omega-3s to omega-6. So if you don't know, your omega-3 fatty acids are your anti-inflammatory fatty acids, and then your omega-6 are your inflammatory fatty acids. And just to be clear, omega-6 are not bad. I know they get demonized, but we need both. That's why they're essential fatty acids. But we do want to make sure that that ratio is sitting in a good spot. Sometimes with our diet, it can be easier to overdo it in our omega-6s because it's found in processed foods and vegetable oil. And so we want to make sure that we're getting plenty of those omega-3 fatty acids because they help to reduce inflammation in the body. And we'll talk in a minute about the importance of reducing inflammation, but just a couple highlights on that. High inflammation can drive high estrogen and make certain symptoms like painful periods, heavy bleeding, and sore breasts that much worse. And high inflammation can also drive cortisol because cortisol is an anti-inflammatory hormone, and so it has a dampening effect on inflammation. So in response to high inflammation, your body will use cortisol as a way to lower that inflammation. So it can increase cortisol levels, and that can actually cause a decrease in progesterone levels. So we really want to make sure that we are trying to reduce inflammation as much as possible in the body, and omega-3s are a great way to do that. So when we're talking about good sources of healthy fats, think of things like olive oil, fatty fish, coconut oil, avocado oil, grass-fed butter, ghee, nuts, seeds, avocados, and olives. Okay, next on the list, we have our third macronutrient, carbohydrates. So let's talk about why we need it and how it impacts our hormone health. So first and foremost, carbohydrates provide the body with glucose, and that is the body's preferred energy source. So carbs often get demonized for being responsible for weight gain or wreaking havoc on blood sugar, but it's really important to know that women's hormones are especially sensitive to low-calorie or low-carbohydrate diets, so we really want to make sure that we are consuming adequate carbohydrates. So if we aren't consuming an adequate intake of carbohydrates, our bodies can make glucose through the process of gluconeogenesis, but it's important to know that this can actually be a stressor on the body, and it can raise cortisol levels because cortisol is a catabolic, meaning a breakdown hormone, that's job is to ensure that we have adequate energy, and it does this by breaking down tissues like protein to then be turned into glucose for our body to use. And this can be problematic because if we're breaking down protein, that means we can end up losing lean muscle mass, which we definitely don't want. And that's why carbs are considered to be protein sparing, because they prevent this breakdown of lean muscle mass, which again, we want to keep at all costs. Not only that, but if you're somebody who's dealing with a lot of stress in your everyday life, if you're somebody who's perhaps had a history of under-eating or over-exercising, this can just be one more stressor on the body. Again, it's increasing those cortisol levels, and that alone can just wreak havoc on your hormone health. For example, high cortisol can impact the pituitary gland, which is responsible for releasing hormones like luteinizing hormone, which stimulates the release of the egg from the ovary, and follicle stimulating hormone, which stimulates the production of the follicle, therefore negatively impacting both those hormones and ovulation. Low carbohydrates have also been found to be linked to menstrual dysfunction, and they can also decrease leptin levels, and leptin is our satiety hormone. It helps us feel full, and that decrease in leptin can actually lead to loss of period. It can lead to amenorrhea. So again, this is not me saying that eating low carb is bad, but I do think that historically, and by historically, in the last decade, when we talk about low carb diets, we tend to look at this a lot through how it impacts the health of men and not necessarily how it impacts the health of people with periods. And not only that, but carbohydrates are our plant foods, right? Like that's where carbs come from. They come from plant foods. And so with plant foods, you are getting fiber, you're getting phytonutrients, you're getting vitamins and minerals. There's so many good things that come from carbohydrate consumption. And we want to make sure that we're eating these foods. We want to make sure that we're getting enough fiber, not only to keep us regular, but also because it's really important for eliminating excess estrogen. That's how we get rid of excess estrogen in the body through our bowel movements. So we want to make sure that we're getting plenty of fiber to keep us regular, to make sure that we are constantly detoxifying estrogen and we're not throwing off our estrogen progesterone levels. We also need fiber to feed our healthy gut bacteria. In our intestinal tract, we have our gut microbiome and we have these healthy gut bacteria. And some of those bacteria are actually responsible for regulating estrogen. So we have something called the estrobilome, and we're not going to go too much into that in this podcast episode, but it is a collection of bacteria in the gut, and its job is to metabolize and regulate the body's circulating estrogen. And when it comes to consuming carbohydrates, really, diversity is key. We want to make sure that we're getting a lot of variety in the plant foods that we're consuming. So some really good sources of fiber include beans and legumes. So things like lentils, chickpeas, black beans, kidney beans, whole grains, so oats, quinoa, buckwheat, rice, lots of fruit, apples, bananas, blueberries, raspberries, melon, starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes, beets, carrots, squash, potatoes. And of course, things like chia seeds or flax. Flaxseed in particularly actually has lignans that can help bind to excess estrogen and remove it from the body. So yay fiber. We love that. So that brings us to number four on the list, getting enough micronutrients. So we're going to talk about some key vitamins and minerals. And before we do this, I just want to say this is not an exhaustive list. I just do not have the time to list everything that you could be consuming. But again, if you're eating a varied whole foods diet, you're likely going to be getting a lot of this stuff anyway. So I'm going to highlight some particulars that can be really beneficial. But again, this is not me saying to go out and run and get a supplement of these particular vitamins and minerals, because it ignores how everything works synergistically in the body. When you consume food, a whole food, you are getting a variety of vitamins and minerals. You're getting a lot of things that are interacting together. When you're taking a vitamin or like a supplement, you risk throwing other vitamins and minerals out of balance. So, and you also don't always know if you're actually deficient in something. So you might be running into issues where you think taking a supplement will make everything better, and you find that either it does nothing or it actually makes symptoms worse because you might not actually be struggling with a deficiency in that nutrient. So just before we get into this is, again, we're looking at whole foods that we can incorporate that include these vitamins and minerals. Okay. Okay. So first up on the list is magnesium. Magnesium is so important. It's actually a cofactor in more than 300 enzyme reactions in the body. So it's responsible for a whole host of reactions. It's responsible for protein synthesis, for muscle nerve function. We need it to regulate blood sugar. It helps us to relax and to feel calm. We need it for energy production. The list goes on. And we also need it for the production of steroid hormones, for example, progesterone. And I do think it's really interesting because progesterone has a calming effect on the body, and so does magnesium. Magnesium also helps with muscle relaxation, and low progesterone can worsen PMS and menstrual cramps. Magnesium also helps to regulate our stress response, and it helps to promote relaxation. Like I said, it helps reduce blood sugar and regulate insulin. So again, this can be really important for people with PCOS who struggle with insulin resistance, because again, high insulin can actually drive high testosterone. So magnesium can be really beneficial in helping to regulate blood sugar. And it helps to fuel our mitochondria, which is where the production of steroid hormones happen. So we definitely want to make sure that we're getting adequate magnesium into our diets. So lower levels of magnesium in the body can be caused by our diet. So either consuming a diet that's low in foods that are rich in magnesium, or just in general, food processing tends to deplete magnesium levels. High stress can also deplete our magnesium levels, and so can oral contraceptives. So if you're taking birth control, it might be something to be aware of. Thankfully, magnesium is found in quite a bit of foods. So you can find it in leafy greens, pumpkin seeds, almonds, other nuts and seeds, beans, lentils, avocados, bananas, figs, and dark chocolate or cacao powder. So plenty of options to incorporate it into your everyday diet. Next on the list, we have zinc. So zinc is needed for estrogen production, but it also plays a role in ovulation. It promotes ovulation by increasing follicle-stimulating hormone levels. And we need ovulation in order to have adequate progesterone, because progesterone comes from the corpus luteum, which is essentially the follicle once the egg has ripped out of it after ovulation to carry on its journey. You're left with this follicle. I feel like I referenced it in another podcast episode as like this empty backpack that is then the major source of progesterone throughout the body. Zinc also plays a role in thyroid health because it's needed for the conversion of T4 into active T3. And it can also help inhibit aromatase activity. So aromatase is an enzyme that converts testosterone into estrogen, and that can cause excess estrogen. So aromatase can be upregulated by inflammation or insulin resistance, increased cortisol levels, xenoestrogens, mold toxicity. And so zinc is one way to help inhibit aromatase activity. Some other things include balancing blood sugar, reducing inflammation, and reducing stress. So some good sources of zinc include beef, oysters, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and chickpeas. When we talked about protein, we talked a little bit about B vitamins, but I do want to quickly just talk about B6 and its role in hormone health. So B6 helps to rid the body of estrogen metabolites, which decreases overall estrogen levels, and it can also increase progesterone. So B6 is another nutrient that's commonly deficient in people who take oral contraceptives, because oral contraceptives can lead to a deficiency in it. So some good sources of B6 include sunflower seeds, walnuts, poultry, chickpeas, and bananas. Next on the list, we have vitamin E. So vitamin E is a powerful antioxidant that can help to decrease inflammation, and it's needed for estrogen detoxification. So it can help to reduce the impact of estrogen, which again can be beneficial with higher estrogen levels. And some food sources of vitamin E include sunflower seeds, almonds, hazelnuts, and various fruits and vegetables. So next up, we have vitamin C. Vitamin C is also a powerful antioxidant, and we talked a little bit about the importance of reducing oxidative stress and inflammation when we talked about fat, but it can help to not only reduce inflammation, but it can also help support blood vessel integrity, which can be really helpful for PMS and menstrual cramps. Vitamin C is also just so important if you're somebody who's dealing with a lot of chronic stress because of its role in supporting adrenal health. So vitamin C is needed to make catecholamines. So these are our stress hormones like epinephrine and norepinephrine. And when we're stressed, vitamin C gets depleted. So in fact, our adrenal glands actually have the highest concentrations of vitamin C. And as I mentioned earlier, when you're dealing with stress, that's going to negatively impact your sex hormones, because when your body is under stress, you are getting the signal that now is not the right time to focus on fertility. It's not the right time to focus on reproductive health, right? So if you want to learn a little bit more about the role of stress, I definitely recommend checking out my Beat the Burnout Masterclass, where we kind of go into HPA axis dysfunction and what you can do for it. Vitamin C also plays a role in increasing progesterone, and it can help with ovulation, and it also impacts our follicle integrity. It can also help with iron absorption, and this can be really beneficial for anyone struggling with iron deficiency or if you experience really heavy bleeding. And vitamin C is also yet another nutrient that is depleted if you are taking oral contraceptives. So just something to keep in mind. And some good food sources of vitamin C include citrus, bell peppers, guava, kiwi, broccoli, tomatoes, berries, and leafy greens. And then our final nutrient of focus is vitamin A. So vitamin A helps to activate thyroid receptors and helps to regulate thyroid stimulating hormone. And it also helps to move out iron from the liver. So high iron in the liver can impair estrogen detoxification, and it can negatively impair thyroid hormone conversion. So we definitely want to make sure that we're getting adequate vitamin A when it comes to our hormone health. And some good sources of vitamin A include grass-fed dairy, eggs, liver, and fatty fish. And if you're like, ooh, liver, ugh, not for me, you are not alone, but they do thankfully make beef liver supplements, which are great. You can just swallow them whole or break them into your smoothies. And that's what I personally like to do, because I've tried to get on the liver bandwagon, but she is not for me. She is not for me. And that's okay. So we've got options. Okay, I'm going to try to make sure that these last two we hit a little bit quicker. I did not expect this to take so long. So, okay, number six on the list is, number five is to reduce inflammation. And again, we've already talked a lot about this. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about why it's important to reduce inflammation. But I will say that high inflammation can impact estrogen detoxification. So in the first phase of estrogen detoxification, there are three different pathways for estrogen to travel down, and inflammation can encourage more estrogen to travel down the 4-OH pathway instead of the more beneficial 2-OH pathway. And that can actually lead to more reactive ketones that can damage DNA. So we do really want to make sure that we are keeping our inflammation in check. And again, that's why we want to make sure we're getting lots of anti-inflammatory foods and consuming vitamin C. And if you're like, where the heck is all this inflammation coming from? It can be caused by a variety of things, right? It can be caused by diet, by, again, if you're not getting enough omega-3s compared to omega-6s, if you're not getting enough anti-inflammatory foods, but it can also be caused by stress. Stress is a form of inflammation in the body. It can be caused by environmental toxins, by pollution, by chemical exposure. So even if you're doing everything right, there's a good chance you're still experiencing some degree of inflammation just simply because you are a human living in the world and you are exposed to chemicals, you're exposed to pollution, and that is just kind of the reality. So again, not something I think we really have to spend a lot of time stressing over. I know people can get really freaked out by things like this, but you know, just do the best you can. And that's really where anti-inflammatory foods can be so beneficial. So again, like I said before, things like omega-3s, which help to balance that omega-6 ratio, but also berries, citrus, fruit, leafy greens, flax seeds, and olive oil. Are you seeing a pattern here? Because I definitely am. And that's why I was saying at the beginning of this podcast episode that a lot of what I'm talking about today can really just come down to incorporating whole foods into your diet, because a lot of those same foods have multiple health benefits. It all works synergistically. And so by just incorporating some more variety into our diet, we can really help to support our hormonal health. Okay, and last but not least, number 6 for what we can do to help support our hormone health is liver support. So liver is, as we talked about before, it's responsible for over 500 functions within the body. It's got a lot going on. It does a little bit of everything. And so we really want to make sure that we are supporting our liver as best as we can. Now, sometimes people hear this and they're like, okay, that means I'm going to do a cleanse and I'm going to cut a whole bunch of foods out and, you know, really make sure it's going to detoxify, quote unquote, detoxify the body. That is not what I'm talking about here, because There's nothing wrong with juices. There's nothing wrong with wanting to take a break from eating processed foods. However, I do find that when people want to do these detoxes or cleanses, it's really this short-term action, this high-intensity action that, for one, is not sustainable, and two, is often rooted in diet culture. It's often rooted in crash dieting, and it's often utilized as a way to forego the foundations and the basics and instead just throw yourself into a quote-unquote detox whenever you feel like you've overdone it. And I'm not saying that these don't have their place. However, I do feel like a lot of that is kind of a band-aid solution and a poor one at that. And instead, I think people should focus on, again, eating enough to support their body, nourishing their body, having adequate fuel. Because like I mentioned before, if you are under-eating, that is a stressor. That is also going to cause the body to have to make up those energy needs, and that is a burden on the liver. So that's all I want to say. It's just that this is not me saying you need to do any kind of juice cleanse, detoxifying, anything extravagant. No. Just some basic nutritional things we can incorporate. So very quickly, the liver is needed for the detoxification of excess estrogen, as well as other hormones like cortisol. So if we have a sluggish liver, we might not be clearing estrogen as efficiently as we could be. It's also needed for converting thyroid hormones, and it's also needed for converting cholesterol. So like I said before, about 80% of cholesterol in the body is endogenous, meaning we make it in the body, and that happens in the liver. So we want to make sure that our liver is working efficiently. The liver also produces bile, which we need for the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K, and we already kind of talked about why those can be important for hormone health. Bile is also how we eliminate toxins and hormones. So the liver metabolizes hormones and then they're excreted in bile. So it's really important that we have adequate bile production. And so some foods that help to support bile include bitter foods, so bitter greens, radishes, garlic, apples, avocados, asparagus, lemon juice, artichokes, beets, and cruciferous vegetables. And then when it comes to our liver health, we really just want to make sure that we're supporting it as much as we can. So we are eliminating environmental toxins or chemical toxins as much as we are able to. I just don't fall into the camp that you have to be perfect with this. I am somebody, like, not everything in my home is clean and green. There are some products, like beauty products, that I just really enjoy. And then there are other things that I'm not that particular about. And if I can use a cleaner product that has less chemicals in it, I'm going to. And that can be a whole podcast episode on its own. But reducing stress as much as we can, you know, making sure that we're not overly indulging in alcohol, and that we are getting a diet that is rich in nutrients. So we really want to make sure that we're getting enough protein, enough vitamin C, B vitamins, vitamin E, vitamin A, and magnesium. So everything we've talked about is going to be supportive for the liver. And I also just want to quickly mention that cruciferous vegetables are great. They contain a compound called indole-3-carbinol, which helps the liver to metabolize estrogen. So when we're talking about hormones specifically, cruciferous vegetables can be really great for that. And then also sulfur-rich foods. So sulfur-rich foods help to support phase two detoxification. And some good sulfur-rich foods include broccoli sprouts, again, cruciferous vegetables, onion, garlic, shallots, and leeks. Whew, okay, believe it or not, we are done, and that is a wrap. Hopefully that didn't feel like information overload, but if you want, I can quickly recap if you want to just write down these six things, just kind of keep in the back of your mind when it comes to eating for healthy hormones. Number one, we want to make sure that we're eating to feel safe. Number two, balancing our blood sugar. Number three, eating a balanced plate, which means making sure that we're getting enough of our macronutrients, of our protein, fat, and fiber. Number four, that we are getting enough micronutrients. Number five, that we are reducing inflammation and including lots of anti-inflammatory foods into our diet. And number six, that we are supporting our liver. So that is that. I hope that there were some key takeaways for you. In general, if I could give you a key takeaway, it's that we don't necessarily have to stress too much on what we're eating. I don't really think it's beneficial for us to get really narrow in our focus and hypervigilant about what we're eating. Instead, focus on the basics. Focus on making sure that you're eating enough, making sure that you're pairing up your protein with your carbohydrates, and that you're getting a lot of variety in the plant foods that you're consuming. Those things alone are going to make such a big difference when it comes to your hormone health. And on that note, if you liked this podcast episode, please feel free to leave me a review. That is truly the best way to support me and the podcast. And I really love creating this content, and I hope you do too. So if you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it, I would love if you could leave me a review. And if you're looking for next places to start when it comes to your hormone health, I highly recommend, like I said earlier, checking out my masterclass, Beat the Burnout, and also my 4-week course, Diet Freedom Academy, where we really go into the basics of nutrition. It talks a lot about breaking down diet culture, practicing intuitive eating and gentle nutrition, and then it goes into the functional aspects of nutrition and food, and it really breaks things down for anyone who feels lost about how they should be eating or what they should be eating. I definitely recommend checking that out. I'll leave both of those in the show notes. Oh, and before I forget, you can also use the code DFA50 to save $50 off Diet Freedom Academy. So if that looks like something that you want to try out, I highly recommend it. I spent a year creating this program and I love it so much. And I think at some point I need to revamp it because I feel like people hear Diet Freedom Academy and it's not super appealing, but when I tell you, it gives you all the fundamentals you need to know for what to eat and how to rebuild your relationship with food, and I'm so proud of that course. So definitely check out that program, and yeah, use code DFA50 if you want to save $50 on it. And definitely hit me up on Instagram at nourishwithtish and let me know what you want me to talk about next. I think the next podcast episode is going to be talking about the pros and cons of birth control. And also, I would love to do an episode on how to support your body if you are currently on birth control, if you are taking oral contraceptives. We talked a little bit today about some of the nutrients that are depleted. That could probably be a whole episode in and of itself. So let me know if that sounds interesting. And yeah, I will be back soon with a new episode. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.